Today we have the privilege of studying Yeshayahu Perek Tetvav, the 15th chapter of Yeshayah, which begins with the words Masa Moav, a prophetic vision or a prophetic burden regarding Moav. Moav, as you know, is a kingdom which appears frequently in Tanakh. It is a kingdom located in the southern part of what is today Jordan, on the eastern bank of the Dead Sea. It is a kingdom which is mentioned frequently in Tanakh as having been outside the immediate area of conquest of the Jewish people, while also having close links with the Jewish people. It appears most prominently in the Book of Rut, where Naomi and Elimelech from Beit Lechem go to Moab during a time of famine. They take refuge there, and ultimately Naomi returns to Eretz Israel with a Moabite woman named Ruth, who becomes the ancestress of King David. And we see in Sefer Shmuel that King David's family maintained continued ties with Moab. There are records in Sefer Shoftim of Moabite oppression of Am Yisrael, as well as records in the beginning of Sefer Melachim regarding the domination of Moab by the kings of Israel in the time of Ahav, son of Omri, king of Machot Israel, the northern kingdom. This is roughly around 860, 850 BCE, or something slightly earlier than that, perhaps. And following, subsequently, after the death of Ahav's son, Yehoram, the liberation of Moab from Israelite domination, and Moab becomes an independent state. Despite the fact that Moab, after its liberation from Israelite domination, was an independent state, this did not mean that it had no security problems of its own. Moab continued to be oppressed and burdened by attacks from nomads from the Arabian Desert. Because Moab is located on the shores of the Dead Sea, it is located just on the border of the Arabian Desert, and there are many indications that that nomadic bands would come in and invade Moab and try and take booty from the people of Moab. As a result of this, in the time of the prophet Yeshayahu, Moab becomes subservient to the empire of the Assyrian Empire. Moab appears in some of the earliest lists of kings that become loyal vassals to Assyria. It certainly happens in the time of Tiglath-Pileser III, roughly between 745 and 727 BCE. Moab is already loyal to Assyria. And in subsequent years, it appears that Moab continues to be loyal to Assyria on a regular basis. The question is then posed, what does this have to do with our chapter? It's important to note that part of Moabite loyalty to Assyria is that when all the kingdoms of the region stopped paying taxes and therefore rebelled against Assyria in 705 BCE, one of the kingdoms which rebelled was the kingdom of Judah, of Yehuda, under King Chizkiyahu. As we know, Chizkiyahu stopped paying taxes to Assyria, as a result of which Assyria invaded Yehuda in 701 BCE, and the narrative of that attack is to be found in Yeshayahu Prakim Lamed Vav Lamed Zayin 36-37. The same time as that attack took place, however, the Moabites, who had initially been receptive to the idea of a rebellion against Assyria, then disengaged from that rebellion and professed loyalty to Assyria, and thereby saved themselves the brunt of an Assyrian attack. Now, by doing that, the Moabites did in fact avoid an Assyrian attack, but they incurred the wrath of Yeshayahu, who raises the question, why should Moab be saved from such an attack, whereas Judah, Yehuda, is devastated by the Assyrian attack of 701 BCE? We saw the descriptions of that devastation in Perek Aleph, and it's also recorded in Prakim Lamed Vav Lamed Zayin, and also in Melachim Bet Perek Yud Chet, around Pasuk Yud Dalet. The question is, if Judah is devastated, with Jerusalem the only city that is saved, why should Moab dwell securely? So that question is explored in Yeshayahu Prakim 15 and 16. Why should Moab dwell securely while Jerusalem is the only city in Yehuda that's saved, and the rest of Yehuda is devastated. Is Moab, in fact, being rewarded for its loyalty to Assyria? The question is really chiefly explored in chapter 16 of Sefer Yeshayah. Chapter 15, in contrast, contains 9 psukim of mourning upon the destruction of Moab, with precise geographic references. It is extremely difficult to date this perek to a particular event. It is the view of some modern academic scholars that this perek represents a conflation of traditional Moabite mourning elegies, which were said about the destruction of cities, and that these mourning elegies are used here by the Navi, who quotes them, in order to contrast between the destruction in Moab and the possibility that Jerusalem, at least, will be saved in the continued existence of Jerusalem and Judah as a stable kingdom. That question is important when we get to Perek Tet Zayin, but it is important. So Perek Tet Vav chiefly functions as an introduction to Perek Tet Zayin. Perek Tet Vav does not contain any engaging theological speculations about the nature of the relationship between Moab and Yehuda, but chiefly speaks about the destruction of Moab. And so as we go through it, I will just focus on the translation and on one of the reactions of the Mefarshim to this perek, but realize that it is chiefly an introduction to the subsequent perek, to Perek Tet Zayin. Masa Moab, a burden of prophetic vision to Moab. Ki bileil shudad ar Moab nidma. Ki bileil shudad kir Moab nidma. For on the night that the city of Moab, was robbed, it was destroyed. For on the night that Kir Moab was robbed, it was destroyed. I translated the word nidma here as destroyed, but the verse could also be understood with nidma in the meaning of to become silent. And that is how Rashi renders, in contrast to Radak. And so perhaps we should understand here, on the night that Ar Moav was robbed, it became silent. On the night that Kir Moav was robbed, it became silent. Why did they become silent? Why did these cities become silent? What was their normal behavior? Well, here is a description, Pasuk Bet, of the normal behavior of Moabite mourning. Allah habayit v'divon habamot levechi. They went up to the house, and to Divon and to its high places for crying. Now we know from the Mesha stone of the existence of a high place or a sacrificial locus in Divon. Divon is a city in the center of Moab, located slightly north of Nachal Arnon, which has been excavated and is known in Arabic as Diban. So Allah habayit v'divon levechi, they would go up to the high places in Divon and in order to cry. Levechi. Al nevo v'al medva Moav yeyelil. Moav will cry for Nevo and Medva. Nevo is a city in Moav, besides being the place where Moshe Rabbeinu died at the mountain Har Nevo. Nevo is also the name of a city. And so is Medva. B'chol roshav korcha kol zakan girua. All their heads are laid bald. All their beards are ripped. This is a description of mourning rituals, the shaving of the head, the ripping of the beard. B'chutzotav chagrusak. In its streets, and this is a reference to the streets perhaps of one of these cities. In its streets they wear sackcloth. Agagoteha uvirchovoteha kulo yeyelil yored babechi. On its rooftops and in its public squares, all of them scream. They go down crying. Vatizak cheshbon ve'el alei. Cheshbon and el alei, other cities in Moab. Cheshbon, we are moving northward here. We started with Dibon, which is in the center of Moab. We move along the main road north to Medva, which is located roughly parallel with the northern tip of the Dead Sea, and then to Nevo, which is in the same region, and then farther north to El Alay and Cheshbon, which are located parallel with just north of the northern tip of the Dead Sea, the very northern tip of the Dead Sea. Cheshbon is about 15 kilometers, 20 kilometers south of Amman, the capital of Jordan, which is known in Tanakh as Rabat Ammon. So Cheshbon is really on the border between Moab and Ammon. So we're now touching the northern border of Moab in Pasuk Dalet. Vatizak Cheshbon ve'el Alei. Cheshbon and El Alei cry out. Ad Yahatz nishma kolam. Until Yahatz, their voice is heard. Al kein chalutzei Moab yariu. Nafsho yar'alo. Therefore, the vanguard of Moab, those who go in front of the Moabite armies, will cry out, Nafsho yar'alo. This is a difficult phrase, and I will leave it untranslated for now. Libi leMoav yizak. My heart calls out for Moab. Biricheha ad sohar eglat shlishiya. Ki ma'ale haluchit bivchi ya'ale bo. Ki derech choronaim za'akat shever ye'o'eru. Because they will go up to ma'ale haluchit in cries, in with tears, with crying. Ma'ale haluchit, another location in Moab. Ki derech choronaim, the road of choronaim is a road in the southern part of Moab. Here we've seemed to have finished our advance northward, and now we're looking at the south part of Moab. Ki derech choronaim za'akat shever yo'eru, they cry out a cry of destruction. Yo'eru, Rashi comments here, lashon arami, it is the Aramaic form, the Aramaic verb for crying out. But one might be justified in questioning whether it is perhaps also a Moabite term that the prophet is using here, because we know of several correspondences between Moabite and Aramaic, and more broadly between the languages at the eastern side of the Jordan River and Aramaic dialects. For the waters of Nimrim, and here again we're looking at the northern tip of Moab, already going into the area closest to Ammon. Kimei Nimrim, the water of Nimrim, refers to the Wadi Nimrim. This is a wadi which spills into the Jordan on the east side of the Jordan, just north of Jericho. Kimei Nimrim Meshamot Yiyu, Ki Avesh Chatzir Kala Deshe Yerek Lo Haya, the straw is finished, the straw is dry, the grass is finished, there is no green. Al Kain Yitra Asa. This is a very difficult phrase. Al Kain Yitra Asa. So the parallel phrase, which is quoted in Sefer Yirmiyahu, adds the word, Sefer Yirmiyahu in chapter 48, adds the word avad. Al Kain Yitra Asa Oved. The Yitra could be understood as its honor or its respectfulness or something like that. Ken Yitra Asa, therefore the honor or the respectfulness that it has earned will be lost. Rashi here, however, has a very interesting comment which is worth quoting because it gives a perspective on the parak as a whole. I am not sure the precise correlation between Rashi's comment and the difficult phrase Ken Yitra Asa. Rashi comments as follows: Tavo alav apuranut hazeh, because of what he has done, this punishment will come upon him. Shayu kfuye tova, because they did not recognize the good that the Jews had done to them. The Moabites did not recognize the good that the Jews had done to them. Sharei b'chama mekomot amar Avraham lelot, in several places Avraham stood up for Lot. Lot, of course, is the ancestor of Moab, as we read in Sefer Bereishit, Parshat Vayera, Chapters 18 and 19. Bitzeto mecharan belechto leMitzrayim uvizchuto shulach mitoch hafecha v'neicham alav im Amraphel v'chaverav. Rashi quotes several good things that Avram did for Lot. He took him with him from Haran. He took him with him when he went down to Egypt. Because of Abraham's merit, Lot was saved from the destruction of Sodom, and Abraham fought for Lot against the kings in Bereishit Perak Yudalet 14. V'ayalahem ligmol tova lezaroah. The Moabites should have been good to the children of Abraham. V'hem ayu monim otam. But rather, they would laugh at them. And Rashi quotes the following story. K'shehiglas ancheriv laruveni v'lagadi. V'hayu Yisrael bochim umitonanim. V'hayu omrim lama atem... When Sancheriv, Rashi says, exiled Reuven and Gad. This refers to the campaign of 733-732 BCE, in which Tiglath-Pileser, the third king of Assyria, exiled not only the Galil, as we mentioned, but also the east side of the Jordan, including the ancestral inheritances of the tribes Reuven and Gad. Rashi quotes, this is an exile which Sancheriv accomplished. Rashi is following in the Derech of Chazal, where Sancheriv serves as a collective name for all of the kings of Assyria. And the Israelites would cry and complain. And the Moabites would respond, "Lama atem mitonanim? Why are you crying? Halo levet avichem atem holchim? Aren't you going? Why are you crying? Aren't you going back to the house of your ancestors? In other words, you're being exiled back to Mesopotamia, whence Abraham came." Avraham avichem lo me'ever hanarba. Didn't Abraham come from the other side of the Jordan? The other side of the Euphrates. Of course, the response is that we, the Jews, are not intending to go back to where Abraham came from. We are intending to stay where Abraham went to. But that is how Rashi deals with this pasuk, and he attempts to understand the mourning over Moab here as a reaction to the Moabite behavior towards the Jews. Rashi then goes into the specifics of the period of Yeshayahu when he comments, Ve'od, Shesiyu et Sancheriv shalosh shanim shetzar al Shomron. He references a pasuk in Melachim, which speaks about a siege upon Shomron for 3 years. Again, Rashi mentions Sancheriv as the author of that siege. Of course, Sancheriv here again serves as a collective noun for all the Assyrian kings. We know that that siege was done by Shalmaneser, as Sefer Melachim states, Shalmaneser V. So, the Assyrians here are being accused, excuse me, the Moabites here are being accused of helping the Assyrians to besiege an Israelite city, namely Shomron. And that ties in with the larger context here, in which Moab is being criticized for its help to Assyria in its campaigns, among which were campaigns against Yisrael and Yehuda. So let's go back to the pasuk. Al ken Yitra asa ufkuratam al nachal ha'aravim yisaum. Therefore, at the beginning, al ken Yitra asa. Therefore, they have done honor or respectfulness, and I suggested it means therefore the honor and respectfulness which they have done will be lost. The continuation ufkuratam al nachal ha'aravim yisaum. Here too, we look at Rashi. Ufkuratam the Kuratam here means the punishment that I will bring upon them is that they will be carried away as captives till Nachal Ha'aravim. Nachal Ha'aravim, Rashi identifies as Bavel. Literally, it means the Wadi of the Willows. Whatever this Wadi of Willows is, this is the place to which the Moabites are going to be exiled. And so this fits in with a larger motif of destruction in the Perek. Ki kifah ze'akait gvul Moav ad eglayim yillata uve'er elim yillata. The crying has encompassed all the borders of Moab, until Eglaim is the cry, and Be'er Elim too is crying out, or until Be'er Elim is her cry. The last pasuk tet contains a play on words, Kimei Dimon Mal'udam, because the waters of Dimon have filled with blood. What is the waters of Dimon here? This seems to be a reference to the waters of Divon. Divon, one of the chief cities of Moab, is being played here and called Medimon. The waters of Dimon have been filled with blood. Ki ashit al Dimon nosafot, because I will place extra things upon Dimon. What will the extra things upon Dimon be after this exile? Lifleitat Moab aryeh vilish erit adama. The remainder of Moab will suffer the lion, and that which remains after that will suffer the earth. What does it mean, will suffer the lion or will suffer the earth? Rashi here suggests the Aryeh as a reference to Sancheriv. He quotes Psukim in Sefer Yirmiyahu, and there are also several references in the Assyrian text to Assyrian kings roaring, and this may be Yeshayahu playing with that image, that the remainders of Moab will suffer the lion, namely the Assyrian kings, and then they will suffer from being buried into the ground. That's the reference, the Adama, which will be the punishment for that She'erit. So again, to summarize the Perek, it functions chiefly as an introduction to the subsequent Perek, the Perek Tet Zayin, and it exposes the mourning in Moab that will obtain upon a destruction, and the final Psukim note that this destruction is accompanied by a exile, which would suggest Assyrian references, as well as those who remain from the exile will be attacked by the lion, and then those who remain from the lion will go into the earth. This serves as a useful introduction for the next parak, in which Moab is contrasted with Yehudah.